It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds. It's Friday, the 22nd of March, 2024. This is for professional investors only and never ever investment advice. Now, it's been all go for central banks this week, with only really the Fed keeping to a stale script. We'll start with the Bank of Japan, which we already talked about to some extent, but their historic move away from negative interest rates, i.e. a 0.1% hike up to zero. Although they did do away with yield curve control at the 10-year point of the yield curve, headlines such as how the Bank of Japan's plan for a smooth exit from negative rates unraveled on Reuters, for instance, show that this was not the decisive action that markets and economists had hoped for or expected. So it was a bit of a communication fail, perhaps, in some extent, from the Bank of Japan in particular. There was some uncertainty around the JGB bond purchasing program continuing, even though, you know, as we talked about, we've taken away the emphasis on the 1% target for the 10-year yield. And there's also reports in Reuters again that the recent deceleration in inflationary pressures, this is really in the CPI rather than in wages, which have been fairly robust, but in the inflation numbers themselves, the upward pressure has seemed to dissipate a little bit, has led, again according to Reuters, to differences between Governor Ueda's deputy governors and wavering from Ueda himself on the timing of the exit from negative interest rates, which he did, and zero interest rates that he didn't. So apparently, until the last minute, there were two different plans on the table about the kind of the big policy moves. And this kind of uncertainty is weighing a little bit on the market, and weighing particularly on the yen, where we're kind of stuck at or around 150. So today we're at 151.47. 2-year JGBs have, though, risen in yield from where they were in January. They were down at zero then. Today they're at 0.2%, which is the highest, I think, since about 2011. So there are a few mixed messages there. I think a lot of uncertainty and worry from the Bank of Japan about how sustainable the blip upwards in inflation is going to be, despite the stronger wage pressure and general optimism that you saw in things like the equity market. So big week for the Bank of Japan, but perhaps just as big a week elsewhere in the other direction. So next up we have Switzerland, where we got a surprise rate cut. This is the first in 9 years from the Swiss National Bank. They cut from 1.75% down to 1.5%. Now, Swiss inflation has undoubtedly been weak compared to most other areas of developed markets. So it's been below 2% for 9 months in a row now, and it stands at just 1.2%. So, you know, almost half what other central banks are targeting as their inflation target. The perpetually strong Swiss franc has depressed both that inflation rate, but also economic activity for Switzerland. So that's the reason they're cutting. The cut worked in terms of helping to weaken the franc somewhat. So, you know, it's off 4.5% from the end of January now against the euro. It's now a mere 33% overvalued versus the euro on some of your PPP, purchasing power parity measures there. So still pretty strong against the euro, but 4.5% weaker than it was a month and a bit ago. So that means that Switzerland became the first major developed market economy to cut in this cycle. Elsewhere in emerging markets, Mexico became the last of the Latin American central banks to cut, so potentially later in the cycle for them, following last year's cuts from Brazil, Chile, Peru, Colombia. So rates were down a mere 25 basis points to 11%. Inflation there is running under 4.5% now, so 11% interest rates compared to inflation at 4.5% obviously gives you a very punchy real interest rate in the Mexican economy still. And that probably explains why on our ranking of currencies around the world, Mexican peso is probably the most overvalued of them all. And the Mexican peso has been really strong over recent months. The thing they might be worried about a little bit, you know, Chile, one of the first to cut in Latin America, has seen its currency depreciate very, very sharply to become perhaps the cheapest currency in the world on some real effective exchange rate measures of late. So a delicate game for emerging market central banks. Mexico playing it relatively safe with a modest cut, but it was the last Latin American central bank to cut. Remember, Latin American central banks generally have been ahead of the curve compared to the Fed. So LATAM was hiking rates well before developed market central banks were hiking rates in response to, inverted commas, transitory inflation. So, you know, maybe they're ahead of the curve in both directions here and getting it right. Anyway, a quick word now on another central bank, the Bank of England. There was no rate change yesterday. We're still at 5.25%, but there was a definitive change in tone. And this is following, of course, we talked about the better CPI numbers that came in below expectations, still above target, of course, but below expectations lately. But we have eliminated this strange split in the MPC. So last month we had two members, Mann and Haskell, still talking about rate hikes in the UK. So we had a three-way split, most people saying unchanged, two wanting a hike, one wanting a cut. We've now moved so that there is no one now wanting a rate hike, which to me always seemed a very strange thing to do, given, you know, the feed through from mortgage rates and so forth hadn't fully come through yet. But we're now at 8-1, one person wanting a cut, the rest standing pat. But on top of that, we had a dovish Andrew Bailey wheeled out to meet the press. He talked about rate cuts being, quote, on the way. So sterling was much weaker yesterday. And over the past week or so, you know, including that weak CPI number, sterling against the dollar has fallen from 128.5 to 125.92. So probably time for me to start getting my holiday money in quick. Taiwan is the other central bank I want to quickly talk about today. They hiked unexpectedly yesterday. So again, you know, we've got people going in all different directions around the world. Taiwan, very low interest rates, but they have taken their rates up to the highest levels since 2008. So they're up 12.5 basis points to 2%. Not on a back of inflation panic, but they are having some kind of administered electricity price rises coming through, and that's leading to inflation ticking up there. Double whammy if you live in Taiwan: higher electricity prices and higher borrowing costs. But there you go. Anyway, they have hiked. Now, finally, on central banks, it's not really a central bank move, but it is kind of policy related. China is worth watching at the moment with its currency. So last night, China allowed its currency to depreciate through 7.2, where it had been kind of stuck at in terms of allowing to depreciate. So throughout January and February, it had been banging up against this 7.2 level to the US dollar. Well, last night, that was allowed go completely. So we're now at 7.23, nearly 7.228 to be precise. So that's been allowed to go, and I think that's helpful for the Japanese economy, but probably also reflects the fact that they're looking at the Japanese yen, seeing the weakness there in the yen, and realizing that their relative competitiveness would depreciate if they didn't do anything. So China's allowed its currency to start depreciating once more. I'm going to finish today with a bit on monetary policy rules. And this is as a result of a note that I've been reading from Michael Gappan and Jesse Opar from Bank of America Global Research. And it's looking at different monetary policy rules. Remember, monetary policy rules are things like the Taylor rule, where you look at factors like the output gap, real R-star rates, and ask yourself, well, if you were coming up with a rule that central banks just followed automatically, what would you end up with in terms of ending up with your optimal monetary policy. So they've looked at six monetary policy rules, including the Taylor rule and the adjusted Taylor rule, things like the inertial rule, the alternative R-star rule, the forward-looking rule, and another rule that places what they call a low weight on the output gap. So they've looked at these six rules, and in all cases, as your kind of your headline summary, all of them call for rate cuts now, and four of the six call for relatively immediate and significant rate cuts. I would say that in most of the cases here, and we said that there is a function here for the long-term R star or the long-term neutral rate of interest within these rules. If you're relying on those long-term rates being very low and haven't adjusted them upwards in response to changing demographics or changing degrees of globalization, higher rates of government borrowing that might have impacts on higher long-term rates. So if you're keeping your R-star very, very low, down at 0.5% or whatever, those are the rules that call for rates to come down immediately and hard. So I'm looking at the Taylor rules that they've got in this thing now, and the Taylor rule would suggest that rates need to come down from 5 and a bit down to 3 almost instantly. In the case of the 1993 Taylor rule, a bit higher than that, maybe 4 for the 1999 Taylor rule, and so forth. But even the Taylor rules that have higher estimates for R-star end up with rates coming down from these levels. But, there we go. It's worth a read if you can get hold of it, but all of the Taylor rules really calling for significant rate cuts over the foreseeable future. It's just really the pace of it that make a difference in terms of when the Fed should be cutting. So monetary policy rules are calling for rate cuts to come down now. We'll see what the Fed does later this year. June probably. Bye.